Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, The Rolling Hills Asylum. Originally referred to as a poorhouse, the Rolling Hills Asylum was home to many. There was little discussion of who would be housed at the Rolling Hills, or could be, or needed to be. The building and grounds would end up being homes for orphaned children, families, destitute elderly, physically handicapped, mentally unstable, morally corrupt, and even criminals. All considered archaic and cruel by modern standards, these institutions were commonplace in the United States and in many parts of the world in the 19th and 20th century. It's easy to understand why there would be so much negative and hostile energy in such a confined space. Rolling Hills Asylum, at that point in time, was considered to be the perfect place for the unwanted. Rolling Hills Asylum was located close enough to populated areas, yet far enough to not have to look at those that society had cast out. Once admitted as what they called an inmate, residents of Rolling Hills Asylum would never leave its grounds. Changes did come to Rolling Hills, though. The property would eventually transition into a beloved nursing care facility. By that time, in the late 1970s, many of its buildings and land had gone into a perpetual change phase. The area would see restaurants, shops, and other businesses housed within the rooms of Rolling Hills Asylum. And it is in this time period where stories of the paranormal began to be reported. Strange noises in the night, a corridor where shadow people would roam freely. And in more recent times, conscious and sometimes humorous comments coming through as investigators try to make contact with the dead while collecting EVPs. For a facility that once held some very negative energy, surprisingly, there seems to be a positive energy emanating from Rolling Hills Asylum these days. On this episode of The Grave Talks, we discuss the current state of affairs with Sharon Coyle, the current caretaker of the facility.
Well, counties around the country in the late 17 and early 1800s were trying to develop a welfare system of sorts for their mentally and physically disabled and their orphans and their widows and all types of people that needed help. And around 1825, Genesee County started looking out at this area here, where I'm at now, because we had a bunch of wide open farmland. We're away from all the major towns and other locations where they could ship out all these people and they'd be out of mainstream society. People wouldn't have to look at them, deal with them, and yet they'd be in an area where they could be self-sufficient because they could have their own food source, crops and cattle and so forth. So they built the Genesee County Poorhouse, is what we opened up as in January 1st, 1827. And it housed all those people, including Civil War soldiers and, all types of people. And if you were a widow, an orphan, a drunkard, mentally or physically disabled, anybody that needed help, anybody that was homeless or just needed a leg up or just wanted to be shipped out of mainstream society. I mean, even if you were, some criminals were even brought out here, depending on what your crime was. So that's what happened in 1827. And we had all a bunch of dormitories and dining rooms and care rooms and barns and silos and pigsties and chicken coops, and it was really quite something. It was 108 acres of land, and it was all self-sufficient. I mean, there was this one woman, Mary, and, there was nothing wrong with her mentally, but she had, a cleft palate, and she didn't have any cartilage on her ears, and she had, I can't think of what I want to say. She had problems walking with her legs. She had, her feet were turned in, and so she couldn't really stand up and walk very well. But, I mean, there was nothing mentally wrong with her, but there was no place to put her. She was hard to understand when she spoke because, she had the cleft palate and she would spit, so she'd get everybody wet. And she looked different because she didn't have any cartilage on her ears. But there wasn't anything, mentally wrong with her, but people didn't want to deal with people like that, so they this was a place to put them.
With literally so many people from different walks of life, all intermingled in this one facility, how did they manage it? How did they keep people separate? Did they keep people separate, or how was this handled?
Well, there was a keeper of the house, as they used to call them, or a superintendent or a caretaker. Mainly, they called them the keeper of the house. And there were different ones over the course of the history of the property, of course, because of how long we've been open. But they would manage everybody and oversee all the different departments. And so they would have traveling doctors and nurses come in. They, at the very beginning, when it was a poorhouse, they didn't have staff on for the medical facility. But they would have traveling nurses and doctors come in. There was a head cook. There was someone that was head of the farm animals. There was someone head of the laundry. So they had, you know, several different departments throughout the property. And this keeper would oversee all of them. And everyone was segregated by sex. So you'd have males in one dormitory and females in another dormitory, and not necessarily broken down by age or any other reason, just normally segregated by sex. And everyone that was lived here was referred to as an inmate. It was like a generic term. It was just a label saying the inmates of the poorhouse. And all the inmates had to work the farm. And that was to keep the cost down for the county, so they don't have to hire labor to take care of the farm animals and the crops and the cleaning and so forth. And it also gave these inmates a chance to meet other inmates. You know, if you're working in the kitchen, you're obviously, if you're peeling potatoes, you're going to start talking to the person next to you. So you got to be integrated here and not feel like you were isolated and didn't know anybody. And sometimes you were able to learn a skill. If you were out here because you were down and out on your luck, and there wasn't anything really wrong with you, but maybe you were a drunkard at one point, and now they've got you sobered up, and you know you're a decent person. Maybe you know you have some brains behind you and some craft behind you, and maybe you can learn how to be a blacksmith, or maybe you're going to be really great at woodworking, and you're going to build some furniture. So sometimes it wasn't a bad thing to come out here. It really gave people a leg up.
How did someone end up finding themselves confined to this location?
Again, a variety of reasons. It could have been that you were a drunkard in the sheriff's, because seeing you, you know, stumble all over town causing a ruckus. You could have been a widow. Your husband could have died in the war or in a farming accident. And, you know, back in the early days, women weren't allowed to own property on their own. And so the county would come over and take your land away from you. And if you had no family to help you and your children out, they would tell you to pack a bag and we'll bring you down to the poorhouse. You're going to live down there for a while. And so it was really a variety of reasons, health reasons. You know, if you were mentally unstable and you were acting out, you were probably brought down here. Orphans were brought down here. The orphans didn't always stay here, though. Oftentimes, if you had a farmer that lost his wife in childbirth and he's got two little kids and a brand new baby and an 80-acre farm, he can't do all that work himself. He can't take care of the baby and the children on the farm. So he would come down here and pick up two young children, a boy and a girl, to go home with him. And the boy would help, you know, do the chores around the farm, and the little girl would take care of the baby and the other children who were probably not much older than her. And so sometimes the orphans were just pulled out of here.
Other than the situation of the orphans, the adults that were admitted to the facility, what sort of say did they ever have in their choice in leaving?
You know, I really think it just depends on how well they improved and if they had a way to care for themselves. Obviously, if they sobered up and they still had no way of making an income and taking care of themselves, they're not going to be able to leave here because they're just going to be a problem. They could go into crime, robbing, things of that sort. So they had to prove that they were able to be self-sufficient on their own.
In terms of the timeline of the facility, how long was it considered what they called a poorhouse?
Well, we opened up in 1827, and the next change out here didn't happen until the 1930s. 1938, to be specific, we ended up having an infirmary built out here, an actual hospital, the Genesee County Infirmary. So not until like the 30s or the 40s, even into the 50s, it really started to wane down. The land got divided up, and eventually in the 60s, we became a nursing home. So it went on for quite a lot of years.
What was the reason where in time it eventually transitioned and turned into a nursing care facility?
It was a need out here, and I believe by then there was welfare systems and a lot of other government programs that were helping the poor and the needy and the mentally unstable out, and the orphans. I know that there were orphanages that were beginning to be built in the early 1900s. There was dedicated mental asylums for people rather than just all being a hodgepodge poorhouse. I believe Willard was one of the ones locally that opened up, and they took a lot of the mentally unstable people. Of course, prisons were growing, and so a lot of the more criminally insane people went into the prison system. So there were a lot of different government issues that changed in society at that point.
Once it became the nursing care facility, did any stories come out of that period in the life of the building relating to the paranormal?
Well, I mean, there were always different things happening out here. I mean, just like in any facility that you're going to have where you're housing a bunch of different people and different mentalities and different issues, I mean, there were inmates that would strangle each other out in the middle of the night. They were fighting. I mean, it's just the nature of the facilities that occurred back then. But then there were great things. I met a gentleman not too long ago that he worked out here when it was a nursing home, but his great grandparents actually were here during the poorhouse years. They came here individually for whatever reason, and they met here and they got married and left. And that's how his family became in existence today, because they met out here. So not everyone that came out here was in dire need. I mean, some people were brought out here like Roy. Roy was he's our 7.5-foot shadow man. And he was brought out here when he was 12 years old. There was nothing mentally wrong with him at all. He was just oversized. He had gigantism, and so he was, 7 feet tall by the time he was 12, and his father didn't care for him and felt that he was an embarrassment to his family and dropped him off out here and left him out here his whole life. And there was nothing wrong with him. He was very, very intelligent, very capable person, but he just looked different. And being that big in society at that time, what are you going to do? I mean, people are going to look at you and stare at you, and there's no real compassion for you. I mean, you have to have everything made for you specifically. Can you imagine holding a fork in your hand and you're 7.5 feet tall or 7 feet tall when he was first here? I mean, his hands had to have been 12 inches long, at least. So a fork is going to be the size of a toothpick pretty much in your hand. So everything had to be made. And, I mean, I can't even imagine what he did for a porta potty. I mean, honestly, I mean, or when they did have bathrooms, not to be, going down that line of thought, but I mean, a 7-foot man on a standard toilet is going to be pretty awkward.
Quite a dramatic change from what I understand of life when it was a poorhouse to a nursing care facility in the 1960s. Just how different was life there once that transition had occurred?
Sure. The nursing home in the 60s, from what I understand, the residents loved it here. You have to remember we're still wide open fields. Some of the land had been divided, and adjacent to us was created the Genesee County Park. So there's trees here, there's wide open fields, there's deer coming through, there's bunnies coming through. So they're able to sit outside and have flower gardens and things of that sort. I've met many people that when they were children would come here and visit the elderly at the nursing home and come and put on plays for them, like whether it was the Girl Scouts, or they would come in and do bell choirs or help them with arts and crafts. So, I mean, they really loved it here. And from what I understand, when it closed down in 74 and they shipped everyone over to Batavia to the new facility, I mean, many of them cried and cried and cried. They really didn't want to leave here. They enjoyed it when it was the nursing home quite a bit.
Also at that time, rumblings would flare up regarding unexplained occurrences, correct?
Well, it's really funny, and I really think it has a lot to do with the era and the mentality of people and just what was acceptable to talk about, because I have met several people, many people actually, that had something to do with the nursing home, whether they worked here, had relatives here, visited here, was a vendor dropping off, supplies here. And, most people have said, oh, I didn't know it was haunted. But you know what? You have to remember, too, back in the day, people didn't talk about stuff that they couldn't explain because people would deem you crazy.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.